There's a man on, it's Embley. He's got it now, Embley. Did he play on? Yes, he did. Weaves around, makes it hard for himself. This will bring the house down. Degree of difficulty 10.
Welcome to the Centre Square podcast on Sport FM 91.3, your football headquarters. On today's show, we go through preliminary final week of the AFL, the Waffle Grand Final, in strife, tips, injuries, and big news throughout the week. Noah Tonkin, Luke Aving, join me. Boys, how are we?
Yeah, good to be back. You know, had a couple of weeks off with work, but yeah, finally it's good to be back in the studio and having a bit of fun with the boys. So,
yeah, good to be here.
Yeah, that's good, boys. Big special guest this week, pick 57 in the 1998 AFL Draft, 250 games for West Coast, 2000 Rising Star nominee, 2006 Premiership player and the 2006 Norm Smith medalist. Andrew Embley, welcome to the show.
Good on you, boys. It's nice to be one of your guests. I hear you've rattled off three pretty good names so far, so hopefully I can do a good job for you.
Yeah, thank you. Definitely the biggest guest of the lot so far. But first question, growing up playing for Bassendean Junior Football Club, can you talk us through early days as a kid and what sort of memories did you have with your brothers who eventually turned out to be decent footballers as well?
Yeah, so growing up in Bassendean, I absolutely loved just all sports, really. So I played a lot of cricket in summer, but football was a sport that I just absolutely was obsessed with. And when I speak to my mum and dad, a lot of my brothers and my sister, would go to bed with toys and teddy bears and stuff, and I'd have a football in my arms from an early age. So I just loved it. I lived it. I breathed it. Every time I'd finish school, I'd want mum and dad to keep the footy with me in the backyard. And all I wanted to do, actually, as a young kid, fellas, was grow up and play for Swan Districts Football Club. Mm. So mum and dad would take me down to the football on a Saturday afternoon. We'd go and watch Swans play, and I was just obsessed with Swans. And all I wanted to, as I said, do was to put that black and white jumper on. So, it was a wonderful experience and a really proud moment when I did make my debut for Swans as a 16-year-old. But then, obviously, to be drafted by the West Coast Eagles, which I'm sure we'll talk about a bit later, was a dream come true.
Yeah, a bit like Stephen Canelio debuted for the league team at 16. So
he did, yeah. He kicked four goals in that game. I remember it vividly. We all speak about Andrew Cracker's performance as being one of the great performances of all time, which he was. He won the Simpson medal in that game. But, I tell you what, Stephen Canelio, four goals, the 16-year-old kid. Mm. Oh, I didn't even get a kick in my first game. So, as we know, he's going pretty well. And let's hope he can, if the Giants get through, he might be able to play in the grand final as well.
Yeah, hopefully.
Yeah, so can you tell us the influence that your parents had on you? Your parents aren't from Australia, so a bit of multicultural background in your family. So what was your introduction to AFL rules like?
Yeah, so Dad was born in Burma, which is Myanmar. So he came over here when he was about 6 or 7 years of age, didn't know anything about football, and started playing at school. And then some of his mates got him down to the local football club, which was Vic Park, and he ended up playing some junior football down there. And from all reports, actually became a pretty good footballer. He hurt his knee playing Colts football at the Perth Football Club back in the early 70s, and back in those days, when you sort of did your knee, you didn't have really any sort of backing behind you. That was the end of your career. So he sort of finished playing football at 18 years of age. But both mum and dad have been really supportive of myself and my two brothers and my sister as well. Probably the best thing about them was that they never put any pressure on me to go out there and play well. It was just they gave me all the support. They were at every single training session, at every single game, and just allowed me to be able to go out there and enjoy it without that pressure to perform, which, you know, a lot of parents, you know, can put on their kids these days. So I think that was a real blessing for me, that I didn't have that massive expectation from my parents to play well.
Yeah, and I suppose that's, I think, the good thing with kids growing up these days is they're not, there's not a lot of pressure. So I think the performance would probably is better when there's no pressure. So,
yeah, I think so. I think there's enough pressure anyway. And if you're driven as a young kid, then generally the pressure that you put on yourself outweighs anything that anyone else puts on you. So, and that's was the thing with me growing up. You know, I always wanted to play well. When I didn't play well, I was so flat, and used to actually get a bit peed off with my mum in particular, because in her eyes she's never seen me play a bad game in my life. But, you know, as you know, your dad sometimes can be a little bit more honest, so I used to probably enjoy dad's feedback a little bit more than mum's, because as we know, mum's they've got funny glasses on sometimes.
Always best on ground, always, if you haven't had, always, if you haven't had to touch. But next question was, as you touched on earlier, making your waffle debut for Swans in 1998, was it then that you realised that you could turn your dream into reality with making the AFL?
Yeah, I think so. Just before that, when I was picked in the State 16s team, so the State Schoolboys squad, and we went up to Darwin and we played against some of the best 16-year-olds in the country, and obviously represented WA in that particular carnival. We won the carnival, and I was selected in the inaugural AIS squad. So I think that carnival for me was probably the first real moment that made me aware that, yes, I'm, you know, a reasonably good player here in WA, but to be able to compare myself with some of the best 16-year-olds in the country and walk away from that carnival going, yeah, I'm, you know, as good as some of these guys, I think gave me that confidence to know that if I keep pursuing this and keep working really hard, and then an opportunity to play AFL football, yeah, may become a reality and not just a dream. So I went away with the group to Ireland, the guys that were selected, and I was fortunate enough to go away with players like Cameron Ling. Who else was there? There was Des Headland. He was a number one draft pick. There was players like Mark McVeigh went along as well. So a few guys that obviously ended up having really good football careers. Brendan Favola was another player that was selected. So there was a lot of players there that, as I said, went on, and I was away for about 3 weeks playing Gaelic football, and I hadn't actually kicked a football, you know, for probably a month. And I came back, and on the Monday night, Peter Wilson, who was an ex-West Coast Eagles player, now a premiership player, he was the coach of Swan Districts at the time, and I basically flew in from Ireland, and on the Monday, he called me up and said, do you want to come down to league training? And I hadn't been down to league training at all. And so I went down there, and 3 days later, he said, you ready to make your league debut for Swan District? So I went to Trinity College, and there was a rule where school football came first. So luckily enough for me, it was in the school holidays. So it worked out perfectly. But I think I must admit, the preparation heading to my first waffle game wasn't probably great, for the fact that I hadn't kicked the footy for 3 weeks leading into it. But a funny little story. One of my mates actually brought a little sign up, and it said Embley for Prime Minister. And anyway, the commentator had a bit of a joke, and he said, well, I'll tell you what, if he gets as many kicks as he does votes, then there's no chance in the world that he's going to become Prime Minister, because he's had a pretty ordinary game. But it was great to get a taste for it.
So we've got a couple of listeners that are in the talent pathway, like playing Colts and stuff. Have you got any advice for them to try and make it to the next level?
Yeah, probably the best bit of advice is that enjoy it and try not to put too much pressure on yourself, but you need to be really committed and you need to work really hard. And there's no secret to performing and performing at your best, and that's you've got to make the most of the talent that you're given, because as you know, we're all got talent, we're all, you know, got some kind of ability, but there's so many more characteristics that you need to be able to make the most of the opportunity that you got, because eventually people will catch up. So enjoy it, have fun with it. Of course you need to really work hard on, you know, all your skills. Watch as much football as you can, live it, breathe it, and I reckon 15, 16 is a really defining moment, because a lot of people, you know, will get distracted with all the distractions that are out there,
girlfriends
and going out, and you know, exactly. So those ones that are really committed and focused through that period can really jump ahead of others, and I noticed that I guess through that period as well, there was a lot of other players that were a lot better than me at 14, 15 and 16, but you know, for whatever reason, went in a different direction.
Yeah. Just a little bit of a different question. What was the biggest spray you copped in your career?
I got a few. John Worsfold gave me a fair few. I remember in my second ever game, we were playing against Brisbane. I was on the bench, and back in those days, when you're on the bench, you're actually on the bench for a long time. It wasn't like these days with all the rotation. So it would have been about 5 minutes to go before half time, and I hadn't been on the ground, and Mick Malthouse was the coach at the time, and there was a message, Embley, you're on. So basically went straight on, and there was a stoppage like in front of me, and the ball went up and got tapped down to me, and I grabbed the ball and I did this massive big torpedo 50 metres, but I went the wrong way. And I remember looking up, and Guy McKenna, who's, you know, like a full back, he's taking his mark, and I'm thinking, what's Guy McKenna doing at full forward? And anyway, the siren's gone, and I remember Glenn Jakovich walked up to me and said, mate, you're going to cop it. And so as we're walking down the race, I hear this, Embley! You know, Mick Malthouse is just grabbing, he's grabbed me by the shirt, and he sort of shoved me up against the wall, and he's given me, he said to me, are you switched on, kid? This ain't school football anymore, boy. This is the real time. And he's, I can assure you, boys, I never kick the ball the wrong way ever again.
Yeah. Better go back to go forward, baby.
I think he dropped me the week after. But, I run into Mick a little bit now. I do a bit of commentary for Triple M, and he does a bit of work for ABC. So we're in the box next to each other at all the AFL games. So, he's a wonderful mentor, and he was a great coach for me.
Yeah, so sort of staying along the coaching sort of side, talking about John Worsfold coming to the club, what sort of impact did he have on you and the club, especially as it was sort of a successful period for the club?
Yeah, it had a big impact on me, Woosha. He was one of those guys that really did have enormous trust with his players and gave you the opportunity to be able to perform at your best, and I built a really strong relationship with him. In the early days, I think I had Mick Malthouse my first year, then I had Ken Judge, the late Ken Judge, for a couple of years before John Worsfold came. And I must admit, in those early sort of years, you sort of I lost a little bit of focus about playing footy. You sort of enjoy all the things that start to come with AFL football rather than the game itself. And so I remember, you know, in a way being at the crossroads a little bit, and I still felt I had so much to give, but I certainly hadn't lived up to my potential and the expectations that I had of myself. And I remember John Worsfold just giving me the opportunity to back myself in and believing in me, and where another coach could have just said, you know what, I'm happy to part ways with you. So he's a great listener, and the one thing about him is that he's a really good character, and he's got really strong values and beliefs, and I think that's really important when you've got a football club, to be able to have strong direction and strong leaders basically directing you in that direction that you want to go. And I thought John Worsfold, you know, not just for me, but for the rest of our side, through at times a challenging era, really led the football club really well.
Yeah, so what are your thoughts? Because there's been big news coming out of John Worsfold this week. He'll finish up at the end of 2020. So what are your thoughts on that with Ben Rutten taking over?
I don't know too much about Ben Rutten besides what I hear, and he's a really good defensive coach, and he's been really working hard on that part of the game for a while. So he's highly rated, and it's great to see young guys get an opportunity. So we're seeing now this succession plan. It might not have worked for the couple of times that we've seen it in the past, but just speaking to a few people in the industry that you know the coaches really well, it may be something that we start to see a little bit more moving forward. It's such a highly stressful job, and just listening to Dom Pike's comments in his press conference the other day, and then a little bit with Woosha, you know, it really does take its toll, and you know, there's so many different parts to it all, and the family part is obviously something really important too. So once you believe that your family's maybe starting to get affected by the job that you're doing, then you need to really sort of weigh everything up. And Woosh has been a coach for such a long period of time now. So he probably believes that, and he's given his absolute all in regards to what he can do. And now it's an opportunity to be able to pass that baton on to someone else that can do just as good job as what he's done, and hopefully better.
Yeah. How much of a bonus was it for you getting the Norm Smith medal and capping off a rewarding year with 26 touches and 2 goals in the grand final in 2006?
I think every player that plays really any league of football, you want to play in the biggest games. And when you do get the chance to play in those big games, of course you want to stand up and play well, because no one remembers what happened in round two in 2006, but everyone remembers what happened in that last game in September. So it's a game that obviously you're under enormous amount of pressure individually and as a team. And I think on the back of losing the 2005 grand final, there was, you know, a lot of pressure on us to firstly get back there again, because just because you make a grand final one year doesn't give you any right to be back there the second. So to give ourselves a chance of going back in 2006, you know, we did feel like, you know, our time was right, and we had to perform as a group and stand up and feel myself to perform and play well. But I also had enormous confidence in my teammates to be able to stand up and play their part as well. So as a group, you know, we all just, you hear it's a bit of a throwaway line, but you know, you just want to be able to go out there and just play your role for the team. So the role that Darren Glass plays, and I speak about this a little bit because, you know, in my eyes, you know, he was a deserving winner of the Norm Smith medal. Now, heading into that game, he was playing on Barry Hall. You know, Barry Hall kicked 5 goals in the prelim the week before against Fremantle. From memory, won the Coleman medal that year as well in 2006, kicked 70-plus goals. So we knew that we had to stop, you know, Barry Hall. Now, in that game, Darren Glass keeps Barry Hall goalless, and we win by a point. So, you know, that's just a great example of someone that, you know, sacrificed, you know, what he had to do just to get the job done for the team. And you know, there's stories like that all the way through the side. So, and that was a big difference between 06 and 05. In 05, there were so many passengers, you know, including myself, that wasn't at, you know, my absolute best, and my teammates weren't either, and that's the reason why you don't win. But to be able to play well and initially to win the grand final, but then to be rewarded or awarded the Norm Smith medal is something that, of course, yeah, I'm extremely proud of.
Yeah, of course.
Do you still catch up with some of the guys that you won the flag with in 06? And do you, is there any of them in particular that you still hang out with today?
Yeah, we're all pretty close. It's hard to catch up with everyone, but we do have a WhatsApp group chat that we are continuing to give each other, take the mickey out of each other, which is always a little bit of fun. So I was just recently up in Bali for Chad Fletcher's 40th birthday party. He had a surprise up there. He lives up in Bali now. I catch up with Daniel Kerr and Quinton Lynch all the time. Chris Judd's in Melbourne, but you know, I speak to him a lot, and we're always catching up when I'm over in Melbourne. Coxie, Glassy, David Wirrapunda is someone that's constantly trying to come around my house to get fed and drink all my wine, which he does very well. So yeah, we're all pretty close, and I think that's what premierships do. It does bond together, and fortunate to play with a lot of people, a lot of guys through 15 years. But I must admit, the ones that I stay in contact with the most, Adam, are the guys that I played in the premiership with.
Yeah. With a poor performance in 2013, finishing 13th on the ladder, what was it like finishing your career? And I guess, did you know it was coming? Like, were you like satisfied, or did you know?
Yeah, it's one of those ones when you first come to the club, you think you're going to play forever. And towards the end of your career, you sort of start to realise that your time is starting to catch up on you. And for me, I knew early in 2013 that the game had caught up with me. So I knew I could still play a role, but you got to sort of weigh it all up. And with where the club was at the time, we weren't playing finals in 2013, with about 2 games to go, I think our finals chances were over. So going forward is a little bit of a turnover, and some of our old guys that had been part of that 2006 premiership team were sort of coming towards the end, and guys like Brad Shepherd and Andrew Gaff were young kids on the... They were going to be, you know, part of the West Coast Eagles' next, you know, successful era. So whilst I could still play for a role for the team, there's other players that could probably play that role just as good, and if not better. So you have conversations with the coach throughout, and that's what happens when you build strong relationships with people like you know, John Worsfold, which I did. So I was pretty, as much as I wanted to keep playing, I also knew that the time, probably halfway during 2013, that it was going to be my last year.
Yeah, so just to finish up on this one, WA is a bit of a footy state and they love their footy and the media's right into it as well. How did you cope with playing footy at the highest level and always being watched by the media and stuff?
Because I was drafted at an early age, 17, I didn't really know anything different. So, as you said, being in the spotlight and especially West Coast, it's just such a big club here in WA and there is a lot of attention on the group. So everywhere you went, you know, there was always people coming up and asking for photos and asking for autographs, and it was just something that really did become the norm. So you understood your responsibility, you understood that it was a 365-day job, 7 days a week. It wasn't just whilst you're at the football club. So, yeah, the club was very, you know, big on making us aware of our responsibilities, as I said, and it just meant that, you know, you're always... just everything you did, you had to be mindful potentially of consequences that wouldn't just impact you, but, you know, bring your football club down. So, yeah, it was something that I was probably aware of at an early age, and we worked, you know, reasonably hard as a football club to be able to make sure that we did the right things.
Awesome.
Yeah. All right, well, obviously a big weekend of footy coming up, three games that WA will be looking at. Of course, the two AFL... preliminary finals, Richmond and Geelong at the MCG. Mitch Duncan is likely to return with Tom Hawkins out with suspension. Boys, what do we think of this game coming up on Friday night?
Oh, good contest to watch. Geelong and Richmond been playing well all year, so should be good to watch. And at the MCG, nothing better than a Friday night prelim.
Yep.
Yeah, personally, I think Richmond will get up. I think with Hawkins being out, it's a massive blow for Geelong, and Richmond will be too strong. Even if they did have Hawkins, I still think Richmond would win. But
yeah, Embers, you got anything to say about this game coming up?
Probably two of the best teams we've seen this year. So Richmond have been huge in the second half of the season, and Geelong have finished on top of the ladder because they have been the best side. And I thought the Cats last week against West Coast, their first quarter, their last quarter in particular, they were just so much stronger and harder in some of the big moments, and I was really impressed with their effort. Joel Selwood back on ball, Blixard's onto a wing. You know, they did really well, and even when Hutchins went to Tom Stewart, you know, I thought his ability just to be able to confuse that situation and stand up, I thought it was a really good performance by Chris Scott in the coaching box after what had happened the week before. So I'm probably... with you a bit, Noah, I still think Richmond are the best team right now, and with no focal point inside forward 50 with Tom Hawkins being out, just not really sure where their goals are going to come from. So it should be a good contest, but for mine, Richmond, I'm probably leaning towards them.
Yeah, I'll go. I'm tipping Richmond as well, because Geelong, with Hawkins out, obviously, it's going to be... just their key forward pretty much is gone. So, yeah, I believe Richmond should get this. Luca, who'd you say you were tipping?
Oh, yeah, I'll probably back Richmond as well.
Yeah.
And for the same reason.
Yeah, as Richmond? Said, Richmond, yeah.
Richmond. Everyone, yeah, Richmond.
Richmond, comfortably, I think.
Yeah, everyone's going Richmond. And then Saturday game, Collingwood and GWS at the MCG. Toby Green could be out for suspension unless the appeal is... changed. Is it tomorrow night? Thursday night?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yep. So he may be out, may be in. So we'll keep an eye on that one. And no Dugowie or Canelio for both sides. So they could be at big outs. You'd assume Canelio, of course, is a huge out. But Dugowie is also pretty big, but isn't as big as Canelio. So could be a good game. But I'll probably back the GWS Giants. With this one, I reckon they're in hot form into prelim.
Yeah, well, Collingwood looking to go one better than last year, so they've got to win this to make the grand final. With Canelio out and Green out as well, it should be slightly tilting in their favour. So I'll back Collingwood on this one.
They've been good, haven't they, the last couple of weeks? the Giants, they're a tough team to pick because the gap between their best and their worst is just huge, which makes it really frustrating, I think, for supporters and for people that are trying to get a read on the Giants. But no doubt the last couple of weeks, they've really turned it around. They've been so much stronger in the contest. I just feel, though, just playing that style of football, the hard, the bash, the crash, might have just taken a fair bit of energy out of the Giants. So on the back of that, at the MCG against a fresh Collingwood, and the Pies, you know, have been in that position where you lose a grand final. They've got a home preliminary final on the back of what happened last year. I just don't think they can let this game slip. So they'll be ready for the Giants, and I think they'll be too good.
Yeah, as Embley said, I think Collingwood are going to be very hard to beat, especially with no Whitfield or Green playing for the Giants. Yeah. It's going to be very hard, but I think Collingwood are going to win. So
yeah, I think it would just be it's going to be a hostile environment. There's going to be 90,000 Collingwood supporters there. I think they're just going to be too strong, and GWS I think will be tired because they've had to play every week. Collingwood have had that week off, so, and it was a brutal game against Brisbane. GWS had to play, so yeah, I think Collingwood would be too strong.
It can make a huge difference that week week off in finals footy, just so you have the week to recover and get over your game before.
And then the WA game on Sunday, the Waffle Grand Final at Optus, Subiaco South Fremantle. You'd expect Subiaco to win, but you never know what South could pull out of the bag with this one.
Yeah, well, Subiaco have been a powerhouse of the Waffle for the last couple of years, making a couple of grand finals. So, back in Subiaco for this one.
Just hope it's a tight contest. Subiaco have just dominated, haven't they, for such a long period of time now, and clearly been the best team in the competition the last couple of years. South Fremantle did knock them off early in the season, but Subiaco's second half has been really good, and they destroyed South Freo in the second semi a few weeks back. So I just hope the South Fremantle are able to make a fist of it, and it's a really good contest. But yeah, as you said, Luca, Subiaco are such a well-drilled side. They're very professional. They make it very difficult for you to score. And I think I can't see South Fremantle knocking them off.
Yeah, especially after Subiaco's year. It's just hard to see them losing, so I think Subiaco will win.
Yeah, I would say I'm going to back my lines in. Subiaco, they lost one game in 2 years, although one of them was to South Fremantle earlier this year. I think they'll be too strong. I think some key players to watch out for. Me and Bray will be at the game. Not sure about the other boys, but
I'll be doing straight talk.
Yeah, key players, I think, obviously, Subiaco Delahunty won the Sandover medal on Monday night. Horsley, runner-up, Ben Sokol, leading goal kicker, Lee Kitchen, their captain. And for South Freo, obviously Hayden Schluth, Dylan Main, Mason Shaw, ex-Stock and Nick Soon, and small forward Brandon Donaldson. So, yeah.
John Donaldson.
Yeah.
I think Subi will be too strong.
Yeah, I believe Subi should get the win. So did everyone say their vote?
Yeah, Subi. Everyone's back in Subi.
All Subi, yep. All right. Noah, I'm going to hand it over to you for In Strife this week.
Yep, a big In Strife segment, as always. So, first In Strife is Toby Green, after most likely getting suspended for punching, was it Neil?
Yeah,
on the ground?
Poking in the eyes. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Poking with the eyes.
Okay. Yeah, to be honest, I think last week probably deserved a week more than this week, but there was nothing really you could charge him for because you couldn't really see what was going on. So, yep, Toby Green In Strife.
Yeah, I think the match review panel is a bit inconsistent. Obviously, Noah said he should have got a week last week, but he just needs to learn when is enough and enough is enough. Like, you just need to learn, you're one of the best players, just stop doing it. It's like ruining yourself and the team's performance, so, yeah.
Yeah, next In Strife was the umpiring in Brisbane versus GWS. I'm pretty sure, Rothy, you had an example
there
of one
was
of those.
I think it was a throw just before the Brent Daniels goal at the end. It was a clear throw. They missed that. Obviously, we don't like to bag the umpires too much.
Yeah, we've got a couple umpires in the room, so you better be careful, boys.
But, yeah, I just think they cracked a bit under pressure. So, yeah.
Yep. Next In Strife is David Warner after having a pretty terrible Ashes series. And it's pretty fair to say that he doesn't play well outside of Australia. They could pretty much only pick him in Australia. What was his high score? Was it
61.
Yeah, and then it was like 11 or something.
He scored 11 in the last
Stuart one. Broad just kept getting him
out. Nine out of 10 times Stuart Broad was able to get him.
And I know Dave Warner, it's going to be hard to drop it, but I wouldn't say it's certainly for the first Ashes, I mean not Ashes, first summer testing against, I think, Pakistan.
Pakistan, the first Australian.
But interesting to see what happens there.
Yeah. Well, Australia's got loads of top order batters, so there's loads of batsmen pushing for selection, so it's not going to be too hard to find an appropriate batter for the spot.
Yep, over to you, Bray, for the Q&A.
Yep, obviously the Instagram Q&A went out yesterday on the Tuesday before we record on the Wednesdays. First question from Luke Pearl: what sort of things did you prepare for big games, Andrew?
I think for me it was more just routine, so making sure that you're well hydrated, making sure that you're carved up, and just trying to keep your mind off the game until the final moment. So it was just trying to not overcomplicate it, not trying to overplay it in your head, keeping yourself really free. When I was in Perth, I'd go down to the beach and just quickly jump in the ocean, and I'd normally do that about half an hour before I had to go to the game, and for me that was just my time to say, okay, now it's really time to sort of switch on. So just trying to keep your routine and your preparation very similar regardless of how big the game is.
I did see on one of the videos about your 250th that Matt Prittis said that you had to work a lot, you had to work on a lot early, was your professionalism. What did that involve for you early in your career?
Yeah, so I think, and I think I might have said it before, but when I got drafted, you know, I was this 17-year-old kid and I was playing AFL football, and you got to really realise that, you know, every kid, and I think I said it again, has got an enormous amount of talent, and I was just wasting the talent that I had. So I just had to knuckle down and be a lot more focused and professional with my football, and, I was trying to finding it difficult to be so focused on football, but then also had all my mates that were going out, I just got caught up doing the wrong things. Not a bad kid or anything like that, but you quickly realise an AFL career is a really short one, so you got to make the most of the opportunity that you get given. Talent will only take you so far, but as I said, yeah, you need a lot of other attributes to go with that talent to get the most out of your football career. So once I figured all that out, I was able to get myself playing through the midfield, felt a lot fitter, stronger, and enjoyed my football career when I was playing well because of the work that I was doing off the field.
Yeah, so this next one coming in from Ben _Merendino, who's the best upcoming Eagles and one to look out for next year?
Some of the upcoming kids. So I really like young Rotham. So he hasn't played a great deal of football, played a few games, but he's going to be a really good player in my opinion. Just reads it really well across half back. He takes a lot of good intercept marks, which he's done at AFL level, and just looks really composed. So he's the one that I've got some high hopes for, and the other one is Oscar Allen, which we've seen a lot of. I think he's an absolute ripper and a future captain of the West Coast Eagles Football Club. I'm not going to put any pressure on him to replace a Josh Kennedy, because Josh Kennedy is an absolute gun. But he's that kind of player, really tall, again, courageous, takes a good grab, kicks it really well. And as we know, bigger and taller guys do take a little bit longer to mature. And I think for what we've seen him do this year, suggests that he's going to be around for a long time and could be a real star of the competition.
Yeah, of course. Next question coming in from at Sydney Swans 2000s. What was the 2005 to 2009 Swans rivalry like? Can you take us through the Leo Barry Mark moment and the 2006 last quarter when the Swans were coming?
Yeah, they were just wonderful games to be a part of, because the Swans were a never give up side, and so were we, and we just had some epic encounters. And as a player, you want to play against the best players and the best teams, and no doubt through that time Sydney were a really good side, and were able to play in some two massive grand finals, but also in some big finals against them. And mark in 2005, that Leo Barry mark, I still have nightmares about it. Still can't believe that Ashley Sampey wasn't given a free kick in that marking contest.
A bit like the Rioli, the Dom Sheed.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Collingwood supporters can't believe that that Rioli didn't give away a free kick. So they'll be whinging about that for the next 30 years, just like I've been whinging about Leo Barry's mark. But yeah, it was a wonderful mark, and it was nice to be able to get back there again. And then, yeah, that 2006 last quarter was it. Yeah. I must admit, I did watch the replay, and I felt more nervous watching the replay than what I did when I was actually out there. Yeah, you're so focused on, you know, the contest, the next contest, that you don't really sort of think about winning or losing when you're in a tight and tough game like that. So it was one of the most mentally draining games that I've ever been a part of. I remember that vividly. I was in the rooms after the game, and I had one of the worst headaches that I've ever had after a game of football because of the focus and how you had to be so concentrating every moment, because one little slight mistake was the difference between winning and losing. So that's probably the big thing that came out of me in that last quarter in 06, just how mentally draining it was.
Yeah. How memorable was the Daniel Chick smother?
Yeah. Yeah, it's I think I was at the other end of the ground at the time, so I don't really remember it sort of too much, but obviously seen heaps of replays off it. And again, it's you just got to take your moment, and that's what sport's about. And you're going to get moments in games, and you know, small moments end up being massive moments that we talk about for the next 50 years. And yeah, it was a wonderful smother and block, and he allowed his great mate Adam Hunter to be able to go and kick the kick the winner.
Did the 1% as well. The next one we've got here is from Griffin Smith 1810. Have you got any tips for me on a midfield role? I have a semi-final this week and want to be the best midfielder I can to help my team win. Do you also think Tim Kelly will be at West Coast next year?
First question about Tim Kelly. Yes, I think he will be at West Coast next year. I know his manager really well, and I know that he wants to get to West Coast. So it's just a matter of being able to work that deal out. And I know West Coast are working really hard behind the scenes to be able to allow him to come to club and then also get a trade that is going to mean that Geelong are happy with that. So hopefully they can get that done. And in regards to your grand final, is it semi-final or grand final? Semi-final. I think don't try to go out there and try any harder, because I guess the question is, you know, where's that effort every other week? So enjoy it, pair like you normally do. The most important thing as a midfielder is just try to get yourself around the contest. So work rate, getting yourself to as many contests as you can. You know, you should always find the more contests you're at, the more chance you've got of being able to have an impact when you get there. So if things aren't going your way early on, you know, there's always a plan B. Don't you know, be too negative on yourself. It might be as simple as putting a block on for your teammate or using your voice. So just stay involved with the game the whole time and lead from the front.
Next question is from Jake Jeekings. When will you come and teach us at Darling Range with your brother?
Yeah, so my brother's at Darling Range. I think he's doing a reasonable job, and that's what he keeps telling me. I've been to Darling Range a few times, actually, and spoken to the kids there. It's a pretty sporty school. So hopefully Mr. James Embley's doing a good job, and he's teaching all you boys and girls very well.
So what do you do actually for a job?
Yeah, so I did a few bits and pieces. I was big into my cooking, so I went and did like an apprenticeship.
Cooking with embers.
I did some cooking. I love the garlic prawns. Yeah, at some restaurants in Perth, and then set up a cooking with embers business. Had a restaurant with Coxie there for a while. So I did that throughout my football career, and it's not something that I'm really sort of too focused in at the moment. More in sort of property at the moment, but. I do enjoy cooking. I love entertaining. I love getting my mates over and family over and cooking for them.
I remember seeing a lot of videos on Eagle Vision.
They really rode me hard with that, trying to get some stories up with guys doing things outside of football. And yeah, he's put the chef's jacket on and go in there and make a bit of a mess.
Yeah. So this next one coming in from Daily Jack Petricelli. What was your greatest fear as a player?
Greatest fear was an individual fear, was not playing well. I used to put so much pride on my performance that when I didn't play well, I used to have the worst week following that game. I'd find it really difficult just to go down the shops and buy milk, and because I used to think that everyone was looking at me going, you know, you played so poor. So I used to hate playing poor and just hate losing, and I think it used to drive me that week after, though. So yeah, you'd want to make sure that you'd look at your game and you'd work on areas where you feel like you can improve and get better, and then you'd be counting down the days to your next game, so you can just go out there and redeem yourself.
Yeah.
Yep, next question from @everything.afl. What was it like playing with guns like Chris Judd, Ben Cousins and Daniel Kerr?
Oh, awesome. I mean, we were blessed to have one of the best midfield groups in the competition at the time, no doubt about that. You know, Brownlow medalists and Chris Judd and Ben Cousins, and Daniel Kerr was a two-time runner-up Brownlow medalist, you know, throwing Coxie as well, that was able to, you know, give his first use. So when you got players like that, it just meant that players like myself out in the wing, you know, could get fed the footy a lot. So the best footy that I ever played was when we were the best team in the competition, and you know, it was those guys that we've spoken about that were having, you know, massive contributions, and you know, we did really bat so deep through their midfield at that particular time. It was definitely one of our big strengths.
Yeah. The next one we got here is from @TaylorReal. Would you ever consider taking a coaching role at West Coast if one was offered?
Coaching next year with the AFLW West Coast team, so I'll be one of the assistant coaches there, and I'm really looking forward to doing that. I've been part of the coaching program so far with the girls over winter, and just watching the girls develop and learn, and trying to help them with their own development and their progress has been something that I've really enjoyed. The last couple of years, not this year, I was one of the assistant coaches at the Claremont Football Club under Darren Harris, so I've done a little bit of it. I do enjoy it when I'm there, but it is a big time commitment, and I enjoy my media roles I do for Triple M and a few other bits and pieces, so you never say never, but it's probably not a path that I think I'll go down in the short term to be an assistant coach at an AFL club.
Next question from AFL_better_player. What was your best year of AFL football?
Yeah, hard. I had a really good year in 2003. It was probably a bit of a breakout year for me. So I had sort of 3 or 4 years where I wasn't at my best, you know, showed a little bit. And then in 2003, I had a really good breakout year. And that was probably the year that got me on the AFL map. So 2003 was a good year. 2006, I had a pretty good year. 2005, I had a good year as well. Just before I got injured before the finals, though, came back for the final series in 2005, but started the season really well. 2011 was a really good year. We finished Wooden Spoon 2010, and everyone basically wrote us off, and I was sort of coming towards the end of my career and ended up having a really good year in 2011 as well. So they were probably my better years.
Yeah, you kicked 17, I think, in that season.
Did I? Yeah. Oh, there you go, eh? You know your footy.
What we're watching.
Google.
Yeah. Vinny, have you got the next question?
No, that was the last question that we had. We'll jump into the sports quiz now, so a different type of questions.
Oh, actually, I did want to ask one more. Our teacher, Simon Parry, I'm not sure if you know him, he did ask, why do they call you Whack?
Oh, yeah, good question. So in the early days, the boys used to reckon I went a bit wacko on the footy field and on training, and used to just run around whacking a few people. So it was one of those ones that did stick. Maybe my schoolmates gave it to me a bit as well at school. So it was one of those silly ones, but as you know, silly nicknames stick, and that's why everyone calls me Whack.
Yeah, so last segment for today. So we have a sports trivia quiz, which happens every week. So on today's episode, our show, it will be Bray versus Embers. So how it's going to work, best of 5 questions, sport-related. Say your name to answer. Whoever gets the most wins.
Ooh,
okay. So, first question. When was the last time all top 4 teams made the preliminary final in the same season?
Bray. 2013?
Correct.
Oh, did you write these questions yourself, Bray?
No, I just thought, because it was Fremantle and
who were the 4? Fremantle, Hawthorn, yes.
Fremantle, Hawthorn, Sydney, and Geelong.
And Geelong, were they? Well done, mate.
Yeah.
I had absolutely no idea.
Like that was a fluke. I just thought, Fremantle, I know, finished high on the ladder that year. And then
They made the grand final, so
well done, mate.
Yes. So 1-0 to Bray. Second question. What year was the last time Subiaco and South Fremantle faced off in a league grand final?
Andrew. South Fremantle haven't played in the grand final for...
This is a good one.
I'll say 2014.
Incorrect. Bray?
Oh, well...
It is within the last 10 years.
So from 2009 onwards.
Yep.
All right. 2010.
Close, but no.
Yes, I know the answer, I think, to this
one. Oh, no, 2010 was Swans.
It's either 11 or 9. I reckon 2009.
Correct.
Yeah.
So South Fremantle won that game, I think. So yeah. So that's 1-1. Third question. Josh Kenny went back-to-back Coleman in 2015-16. Who was the previous player to go back-to-back in a Coleman medal? And what year, if you can?
Bro.
Go on.
Buddy Franklin?
Incorrect.
No.
It's a hard one.
I just thought his 2009, I think it was that year, when him and Fev kicked like 100.
Ambers would have played with this guy.
Against.
Yeah.
Can you give us a hint? Is it like early 2000s?
Yeah, early to like mid.
Early to mid 2000s, yeah, okay.
I know this one. I think I know.
From 2000 to 2006.
Yeah,
2006. Okay, you give me a bit of a hint here.
You can't, I know who he is.
He's like an icon, sort of like he's a fan favorite. He was a fan favorite.
Stop giving him so many hints.
Keep going.
You were getting the same hints, bro.
Barry Hall?
No.
No.
Well, that was my pick. Matthew Richardson?
No.
Brendan Favola.
Matthew Richardson went back to back before this guy.
Do you want to say the answer? Or?
Yeah, I don't think.
Well, give us a couple of hints. What state club?
Oh, wait, should we just name the club?
All right, go.
Yeah.
St Kilda.
Your Fraser Garrick.
Yep.
Yeah.
So what? That's 2-1. 2-1 to Embers. Okay.
I think that was a new little draw, that one.
Okay, fourth question. Who is the current record games holder for the West Coast Eagles?
Andrew.
Yep.
Dean Cox.
Yep, correct. 290. So no one's got to 300 as of yet. I think Shannon Hearn might. But, yeah.
No one so far.
Okay, so that's 3-1.
Yeah,
to make it 3-2. But,
anyway. Your pride.
So the last one is pride. Who am I? So, who am I? I won a club best in Ferris in 2016. I played with Andrew Embley. I'm 183 centimetres tall. I played 201 games. There's a hint if you can't get it at first, but we'll let you guess.
So it's at West Coast.
Yeah.
Eric McKenzie?
No. Still players.
Still players, 21 games.
Is he still playing at Geelong?
Bray.
Yep, go.
Alright, Luke Shuey?
Correct.
3-2. Well, I knew he was 200th as the other week.
Shuey didn't win best and first, did he?
2016.
Yeah. Did he?
Yeah.
According to sources.
I looked it up. Hopefully
I'm right. Yeah, you're probably right. You know what? You are probably right. But did you know he's actually never won an All-Australian?
Really?
He's never made an All-Australian.
No, that's
interesting. Yeah. But you're right. I think he did win a best and fairest.
So that's the end of the sport quiz. 3-2.
3-2, yeah. I'm off for next week.
Has anyone beaten the special guests yet?
Yeah, Ethan beat Gus.
Ethan beat Gus in the first one.
Maybe Harry Marsh, or was it?
No, you lost
to him because that's why.
And then
who was on last week? Noah?
Noah, I think. Yeah. They're smart. These.
Well, that's the episode. Thanks again, Andrew. It's been probably one of the best episodes yet.
Yeah, biggest guest on so
far. Good on you, boy. Yeah. You're saying that to everyone, eh?
Takes our game total up to about 300. We had 173 in total when Reece came on.
We've now got a premiership.
Norm Smith.
Rising star.
That's it. The bar's been set high. You reckon, boys?
All we need now is a brown, though.
Yeah.
But of course, thanks for tuning in, guys. Make sure to check out the socials at Centre Square Podcast on Instagram and Facebook.
keep up to date.
Yep, keep up to date. And yeah, thanks again for listening. You're listening to Sport FM 91.3, your football headquarters. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Thanks.